I want to begin today's session by reading from Ecclesiastes. I don't know if it's a book you've read the whole way through. Certainly some passages are well known, particularly chapter 3 that talks about a time for this and that. But today I want to read a few other passages, and particularly this first chapter. It starts with these words, the words of the teacher. Everything is meaningless is the subheading. So you sort of know it's going to be a bit grey and cloudy in this passage. Everything is meaningless. The words of the teacher, son of David, king in Jerusalem. Meaningless, meaningless, says the teacher. Utterly meaningless. Everything is meaningless. What does anyone gain from all their labours at which they toil under the sun? Generations come and generations go, but the earth remains forever. The sun rises and the sun sets and hurries back to where it rises. The sun blows to the south and turns to the north. Round and round it goes, ever returning on its course. All streams flow into the sea, yet the sea is never full. To the place the streams come from, where they return again, all things are wearisome. More than one can say. The eye never has enough of seeing, nor the ear its fill of hearing. What has been will be again. What has been done will be done again. There is nothing new under the sun. Is there anything of which one can say, look, this is something new? It was already here long ago. It was here before our time. There is no remembrance of the people of old, and even those who are yet to come will not be remembered by those who follow them. I, the teacher, was king over Israel and Jerusalem. I applied my mind to study and to explore by wisdom all that is done under the heavens. What a heavy burden God has laid on the human race. I have seen all the things that are done under the sun. All of them are meaningless. A chasing after the wind. What is crooked cannot be straightened. What is lacking cannot be counted. I said to myself, look, I have grown and increased in wisdom more than anyone who has ruled over Jerusalem before me. I have experienced much of wisdom and knowledge. Then I applied myself to understanding of wisdom and also of madness and folly. But I learned that this too is a chasing after the wind, for with much wisdom comes much sorrow. The more knowledge, the more grief. Here endeth the lesson. I think there's a basic question behind the book of Ecclesiastes, or a couple of questions. Things like, what is the meaning of life? Does it have any purpose at the end of the day? What really matters in life? These are really basic life, sort of existential questions that life throws up from time to time. Throughout my ministry, I've described the book of Ecclesiastes as Solomon having a bad day. Feeling a bit down, if we're honest. If you read the whole way through, and I suggest that you do, it's all generally quite dark and quite honestly depressing. You might sort of come out after reading it and say, I need to do something to cheer myself up. Yes, there are some gems throughout the book, but basically, I think a dose of antidepressants would have helped the poor fella. But isn't it a good thing that we have a book in the Bible that gives voice to a very real part of our humanity? An expression of the despair, the depression, the meaningless and the hopelessness that we all at some point feel. Unfortunately, in church life, and I say unfortunately, in church life, the norm is that we're meant to be happy, praising the Lord. Doesn't the scripture say it? Give thanks in all circumstances. How are you? Oh, I'm fine. Are you? Yes, fine. Fine as fine can be. Rejoicing all the time. And we have a sense then in the culture of the church that, you know, to please God and to fit in, no matter how dark it is for us, we all feel we've got to be somehow rejoicing and praising the Lord. However, here in Ecclesiastes and in the book of Job, that's about 40 chapters of whinging. The Psalms, about a third of which are called Psalms of Lament, where Psalms of Lament are basically where the psalmist says, life's really horrible right now, and it stinks, and I'm not happy. And they pour out their hearts to God. Indeed, there's a whole book called Lamentations, and other parts of the scriptures too. And when you come to the Gospels, and we'll come here on Maundy Thursday normally, to the Garden of Gethsemane, where Jesus himself is in great anxiousness of his soul, sweating great drops of blood. Lord, let this pass from me. Or even the cross, where as I prayed earlier on, that great prayer of dereliction, my God, why have you forsaken me, of all people, me? And here in Ecclesiastes, we get an insight in all these places into the darker part of human life. Ecclesiastes comes in what we call the wisdom books of the Old Testament. Who's the author? Well, certainly from the sound of it, it sounds in that first chapter as if it's Solomon, the son of King David, the king who we remember from the Old Testament, prayed that of all the things he might have wisdom. But the basic message of that first chapter, certainly, and that's a theme throughout the book, is that everything is meaningless. That word came up a number of times. In the old King James, it was vanity, vanity, all is vanity. There's nothing new under the sun. Nothing lasts. And therefore, we may as well all chill out and just get on with life. Eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. That's the positive message of the book. Better, ultimately, however, to live by wisdom than by folly. And of course, we know from other parts, wisdom, the beginning of wisdom is the fear or the respect of God. One of the best loved passages of all scripture is found there in chapter 3. And as I say, there is a treasure here in the darkness. Let me just read that passage to you. Chapter 3 starts like this. There is a time for everything and a season for every activity under the heavens. A time to be born and a time to die. A time to plant and a time to uproot. A time to kill and a time to heal. A time to tear down and a time to build. A time to weep and a time to laugh. A time to mourn and a time to dance. A time to scatter stones and a time to gather them. A time to embrace and a time to refrain. A time to search and a time to give up. A time to keep and a time to throw away. A time to tear and a time to mend. A time to be silent and a time to speak. A time to love and a time to hate. A time for war and a time for peace. That's the part of the chapter we know when we've heard different readings at different times in our life. But let me go on to the next bit of the chapter, because it sits in the context of, again, some of that darkness. What do workers gain from their toil? I have seen the burden God has laid on the human race. He has made everything beautiful in its time. He has also set eternity in the human heart. Yet no one can fathom what God has done from beginning to end. I know that there is nothing better for people than to be happy and to do good while they live, that each of them may eat and drink and find satisfaction in all their toil. This is the gift of God. I know that everything God does will endure forever. Nothing can be added to it and nothing taken away from it. God does it so that the people will fear him. Whatever is has already been, and what will be has been before, and God will call the past to account. And I saw something else under the sun. In the place of judgment, wickedness was there. In the place of justice, wickedness was there. I said to myself, God will bring into judgment both the righteous and the wicked, for there will be a time for every activity, a time to judge every deed. I also said to myself, as for human beings, God tests them so that they may see that they are like the animals. Surely the fate of human beings is like that of the animals. The same fate awaits them both. As one dies, so the other dies. All have the same breath. Humans have no advantage over animals. Everything is meaningless. All go down to the same place. All come from the dust. All to dust return. Who knows if the human spirit rises upward and if the spirit of the animal goes down into the earth? So I saw there is nothing better for people than to enjoy their work, because that is their lot. For who can bring them to see what will happen after them? Again, you want to give the poor lad a tap on the shoulder and say, there, there, there. It's okay, really. Cheer up a bit, misery guts. But nevertheless, he does call in those lovely verses of the first part of chapter 3, a time to give, etc. There's a balance. And there's a call to have a balance in life. It's clearly written by someone who is a bit pessimistic about life. He's a bottle as half empty type person. You know, you talk about, is the bottle half full or is it half empty? He's definitely got a half full bottle. A half-empty bottle, and it's got a chip on the lip. Actually, he cut his lip on it. And more than that, he is somebody who's gone through perhaps tough times in his life. It's a bit depressive in its biting honesty. Life can be hard, even when we have great faith, is the message. Elijah, if you remember, after he has that great moment of victory on Mount Carmel, him against 450 prophets of Baal. What happens next? He runs away to the cave and says, God, I just want to die. And he doesn't find God in the earthquake, the wind, or the fire, but he finds God ultimately in the still, small voice, or in the original Hebrew, something more like the deafening sound of silence. It's a very powerful phrase. But he comes back to this basic question of purpose. Life is meaningless apart from God. Where I live, some of you have been to the manse, but I don't think many of you have been upstairs, looking out over the hedge down towards the valley below me. And you can see the M1 coming up and down. And just one day, a year or two back, I was looking out the window and Alison had sort of said to me, is the traffic moving before I get onto the road? Because, you know, if it's moving, she'll go on at 29A. If it's not moving, she'll go further north to 30. But if it's not going there, she'll go up through Hart Hill to 31 or even Thurcroft to Wickersley that way along the back roads. But I looked out and sure enough, the traffic was moving, but there's a lot of traffic. And it's just one of those profound moments in life when I thought, where are they all going? Where are they all coming from? What are they all up to? And does it really matter? You know, if there was one of those cataclysmic moments when, you know, there was an earthquake and, you know, or tidal tsunami wave, or aliens arrive from outer space and park their earth-destroying ship out in outer space, does what they're running about like headless chickens along that motorway really matter? And then I sort of give myself a slap on the side of the head and sort of stop being so melancholy, Mr. Adair. But actually, this is what's really going on in this book. Looking at human activity and looking at human life and saying, why does it matter at the end of the day? So, is he depressed? No, maybe he's asking really important questions we should all ask at some time in life. What really matters? Are there things that we'll die for? Are there things in our life that we'll say, I'll nail my colours to the mast on that and I'll go down fighting before I give it up? And then you say, does it really matter at the end of the day? Does that really matter that much? I don't know if you've got a place that you like to go to that you get perspective at. Mine is along the Northampton coast of Northern Ireland, the Port Stewart Beach. Some of you have been, I know. And it looks over the Atlantic Ocean in front of you, and to the west there is Malin Head, which is the furthest north part of the island of Ireland. And it's a great perspective, just massive. And on a really good day, when the weather's clear, which is about 2 days in the year, isn't it, Tom? When it's really that good, you know, you can just about work out on the horizon the curvature of the earth. Now, I find that place a great perspective giver. And I used to say when we visited my mum, who lived about 3 miles away from that, I used to say, Mum, before you make a cup of tea, before you make me a cup of tea, I'm just going down to the beach. And the holiday would always start with looking out to that view and just getting perspective. Perhaps there was 101 jobs on my list when I left the house that I hadn't got done and I was feeling anxious about it. And I knew I'd be coming back to it. Maybe I was worried about all the stuff that was sitting waiting for me when I got home. Maybe I was still uptight with all the things that were going on in my head. You just sit on that beach and look out at that view and you suddenly realise you're only one little person on this big island, which is only a very small island, really, in the total scope of the planet. And that this planet is only one little speck of dust in the whole universe. And why am I worried about all those things that really won't matter in the end of the day? It's a great place for getting perspective. I was going to bring down today, but I didn't get a chance to download it, but sometime I'll show you, or you can look it up yourself. It's basically a woman, it's on Google, you can get it on YouTube, but basically a young lady is sitting on the grass and you get a picture of her face. She's lying on the grass and then the camera starts to come out from her face and you see her in the context of the Google factory or whatever, and then you come out a bit further, you see her in the context of the town, the city, that part of the coast of Los Angeles, wherever it is, and then out you see America, out you see the planet, out you see the beyond the moon, and it goes out, 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 suddenly you're seeing the solar system, out, 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 you're seeing the galaxy, you're seeing as far, far out, and you know, they keep sort of saying this little arrow, this little speck of dust is the planet Earth. And you think, wow, how small is this? And then it comes back into her face again, and then it goes into her eye. And from her eye into each cell, and from the cell, and it goes deep, 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 deep into the smallest parts of our humanity. And again, you're left with that sense of wonder that, you know, we are fearfully and wonderfully made, and we matter to the God who designed it all and who's the creator behind it all. Those sort of experiences are needed and necessary when we find ourselves in stress and out of whack with our thinking, so that we get good perspective. Proper counselling therapy is designed to help us look at the stories we tell ourselves in our head about our reality and to try and help us to see things more clearly and from a better and healthier perspective. So is the writer depressed or just simply aware of the futility of much of what we're involved in? Has he got a good perspective, actually? Ultimate worth and value, where does that actually lie? Who's the author? We don't know. The author is purporting to be Solomon, but the style of the Hebrew, the arguments he's using, everything appears a lot later in history than that, perhaps as late as the Greek period, and certainly coming where it does in the Hebrew scriptures in the third section would indicate that it's certainly post-exile. So when was it written? Well, quite late on, probably. But it's interesting that when they came to decide what books would go into the Old Testament canon of scripture, when the technology to be able to create a book, a codex, came along, when they moved from scrolls to a codex, they had to make a decision what books are going in and what order you're putting them in. Council of Jamnia, about 100 years after Christ. Because before that, all you did was you rolled up your scroll and you chucked it in a box. Didn't matter what order it was in. But when you now created page upon page and you've created a book for the first time, the Codex, you have to decide what's going in what order. And so when they were deciding what was going in, Ecclesiastes made them really think, did they really want that book in the Bible, in their list of books that they regarded as scripture? They weren't sure because, well, they weren't sure of its authorship, and they weren't sure of its value. It all seemed to be very depressing and down. They weren't even sure the writer had faith. They were unclear, and yet a committee somewhere put their hands up and said, yeah, let's keep it in. Church council, you know? Is it in or out? It's in. Okay, we're keeping it. And I'm glad they did. I'm glad they did. Because there's many gems in it. And it also validates the human experience of depression and the dark night of the soul. Back to that hymn again by William Cooper. Where's the blessedness I used to know when first I met the Lord? Where is that blessedness? My God, why have you forsaken me? Or maybe perhaps that poem we've all read at some stage, The Footprints in the Sand. You know, the two sets of footprints. And sometimes in my life, when life is hard, there's only one set of footprints. Why is that? Why did you leave me, God, at that stage? That's my perspective. You've left me alone, God. And the answer to the poem is, actually, that's when I was carrying you. So it's important then that the church be a safe space for those who are broken in terms of mental or emotional health. Not the people who are suffering with mental or emotional health are not to be treated as sort of social pariahs or some form of the contemporary lepers in sort of comparison to the lepers of Jesus' day, but people to be fully embraced in the life of the church and travelled with wholeheartedly. There's a lot of interest just in the last year or two, possibly because a vice president of a conference about 3 years ago had a great interest in this and has really brought the conversation to a fore. But you know, the church is a place where mental health and emotional health are taken seriously. I finish with this reading, and it comes from chapter 2. One last bit of glibness from our friend, the writer of Ecclesiastes. I hated all things I had toiled for under the sun, because I must leave them to the one who comes after me. And who knows whether that person will be wise or foolish, yet they will have control over the toil into which I have poured my effort and skill under the sun. This too is meaningless.